Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, welcome to Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. I know many of you are wrapping it up for the week. You've left the train station. You're in your cars. You're on the way home for the Super Bowl, and you could care less about, well, politics. In fact, most of America hates politics. They don't want any more of it, and particularly after they've seen what Newt Gingrich has shown politicians to be. They are more disgusted of the political class than ever in American history. Which leads me to a question, which is, why should you care about the upcoming election in November? Is Obama really that bad, or is it just hype? Is it just the Republicans trying to get back in power, or is this man as demonic as they say? Is he that dangerous, or is he simply just a Democrat trying to help the poor and other living things? Well, let's look at the track record. And we have to look first at some of the other fanatic left-wing, hard-left liberals who are out there and what they're saying and doing. Let's look at Ruth Bad Girl Ginsburg on the United States Supreme Court, who was in Egypt recently. We have the sound for you, and you're not going to believe what you're about to hear. Here is the craziest, most dangerous woman in American history, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, in Egypt telling Egyptians that it's an inspiring time in Egypt. You've overthrown a dictator. And you're going to create a great democracy, but don't look to the U.S. Constitution as a model. If you're drafting a constitution, look at South Africa and its constitution. Here is a woman born in Brooklyn, New York in 1933, appointed by none other than Bill Clinton, and lauded as a great Supreme Court justice because she was once the head of the ACLU. She was the ACLU's general counsel. Now, I could spend hours talking about the dangers of the ACLU, the Anti-Civil Liberties Union, the Anti-Christian Liberty Union. We just know that they're anti-American, anti-family, anti-church, and anti-God. In other words, they're anti-everything that's worth living for. And Ginsburg was the chief counsel, which should have disqualified her from becoming a Supreme Court justice, because here you have a clear bias. Nevertheless, she was appointed by Bill Clinton and ushered into the Supreme Court, and she's still there, by the way, by Republicans like Orrin Hatch and other rhinos. Now she's in Egypt, and listen to what Ruth Bader Ginsburg says now in clip 5. You got to listen carefully.
You should certainly be aided by all the Constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II. I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done.
She should be impeached immediately. It's time for this crazy left-wing fanatic to be thrown off the Supreme Court. But you know we don't have a two-party system. You know that we have a, well, I don't have a word for it other than one I can't use on radio, Republican Party. Because if we had a viable alternative party, a genuinely robust two-party system, Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be impeached today. The impeachment proceedings would begin. And you'd see, once you picked up the rock under which this woman hides, you would see things crawl out from under it that would scare you. But this goes back to the man in the street and who you're going to vote for and why you should worry about Obama getting reelected. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the female personification of everything that Barack Hussein Obama stands for. Barack Hussein Obama is a mini-me of a Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Remember, she's been around longer than he has. This woman is one of the most arch-enemies of our freedom you could ever imagine. Why would a woman on the U.S. Supreme Court say to Egyptians of all people that if she was drafting a constitution today, she'd not look at the United States Constitution, but she'd look at the Constitution of South Africa? You say, well, big deal. Big deal? Are you crazy? Do you have any idea what this is and why I'm talking about it? It goes to the core of Obama and his regime. It goes to the core of why, as bad as the Republicans are, and believe me, I have problems with those rhinos like Romney. Believe me. Believe me. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? They have to be safer for our freedoms than these mad, crazy left-wing dictators, these tyrants. These tyrants who call themselves liberals. You look up the facts on Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and your hair just stands up on the top of your head. Headline, Ruth Joan Bader Ginsburg, born March 15, 1933, is an associate justice of the Supreme Court. Ginsburg was appointed by President Bill Clinton and took the office August 10, 1993. She is the second female justice and the first Jewish female justice. Now, I don't know why Jewish keeps coming up, but it does. Born in Brooklyn, New York, Ruth Joan Bader was the second daughter of Nathan and Celia, née Amster Bader. The family nicknamed her Kiki. They belonged to the East Midwood Jewish Center, where she took her religious confirmation seriously. At age 13, Ruth acted as the camp rabbi. Actually, my flesh is crawling as I read this. At a Jewish summer program at Camp Chenawa in Minerva, New York. Now, I got to pause here. Why would Wikipedia make such a thing about her being Jewish and even going to what Jewish center this woman went to? What does that somehow make her better than everybody? Does it make her have superior virtue? What is this all about? She graduated from Cornell in Ithaca with a Bachelor of Arts degree in government on June 54, and that fall enrolled at the despicable Harvard Law School, where more psychotic leftists have graduated than any other school in the United States of America. I added that last piece of the sentence. In 1972, Ginsburg co-founded the Women's Rights Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, and in 1973, Ginsburg became the ACLU's general counsel. President Jimmy Carter appointed Ginsburg to the U.S. Court of Appeals, blah, blah, blah. Clinton, the nominator to an associate justice of the Supreme Court on June 1993, to fill the seat vacated by retiring Justice Byron White. Ginsburg, now here's the punchline. Ginsburg was recommended to Clinton by then U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno. Now, Janet Reno, as you well know, oversaw the deliberate execution of about 70 men, women, and children in Waco, Texas, a crime against humanity that should have been punished not only in the U.S., but in The Hague. Janet Reno should still be taken to The Hague for what she did to the people in Waco, Texas. But what's the difference? They were just unwashed, poor Christians. They don't really count. And so, therefore, I come back to my first premise, which is, does it really matter whether we vote for a Republican or a Democrat? I think, yeah, it really matters. I think that unless we understand the danger we are in, unless we understand that Barack Hussein Obama is a tyrant, a clear and present danger to our freedoms, we are going to lose virtually all of our freedoms should he, God forbid, be reelected again. I say that quite pointedly because it's very easy to fall into the trap that is being laid for your mind by the liberal media. For example, I learn as I study this, the election come November will be in the hands of 15% of the registered voters. Not 50, 15%. That is the independent voters, those who are not registered Dems or registered Repubes. In other words, my audience literally controls the outcome of the next election. That's right. I will repeat it. That's right. Let me repeat it for you. Nobody else in talk radio has a larger listenership of independent voters than Michael Savage. Michael Savage, the very man you are listening to, will not be talked to by Mitt Romney. Now, you'd expect Obama not to talk to me. You understand that. He fears I might ask him questions that are embarrassing. But why would Mitt Romney fear coming on this show? Why does Mitt Romney fear real conservatives? Why is Mitt Romney so jaundiced to think that he can be elected if he appeals only to the Republican base? The Republican base will vote for him. They're robots. Just as the Dem base will vote for Obama, they're robots. They're robotic. They don't even count. We know that. But with the Republican base voting for Mitt Romney, So what? That's not enough to get this man over the top. He needs you, the Savage Nation. And yet his advisors are so stupid, so bigoted against conservatives that they fear you. They won't even come and face the Savage Nation. That's one point. The other point is the presidency is very powerful in every area of your life, most particularly with the appointment of judges, judges, judges. As you well know, it's these lawyers in black robes who determine whether or not we shall remain free men and free women. And when you look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying to the Egyptians that they should not look to the United States Constitution in writing their new constitution in Egypt, they should look to South Africa. You understand what I'm saying to you? But that's secondary in a way. Here is a woman in Egypt, which is now going through an Islamic revolution. Here is a woman pushing the big lie that the Arab Spring, pushed by her buddies, Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, George Soros, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, the entire pack of fanatic leftists are delusional by telling us there's such a thing as an Arab Spring. It's an Arab nightmare. And yet she here is lying to you, saying that this is an inspiring time in Egypt. It's not inspiring. It's a horrendous time in Egypt. But worse than that, she's stabbing America in the back the very same way that your boss, Barack Obama, does every time he gets out of Dodge. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's a Friday. Most of you are looking forward to relaxing, watching TV, the Super Bowl. It'll be the most watched show in American history, no doubt. Obviously, it's going to be a big deal. And you're not really interested in politics. You figure, yeah, they're all, you know, they're only in it for themselves, and they're all liars. But is there a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats? Well, if they were truly conservative Republicans along the lines of some, and very few, by the way, such as Barry Goldwater, I would say yes. With Romney, I think you're going to get a Democrat president. He's going to be very much like Scott Walker if he should win. Scott Brown, pardon me, who I warned you. Remember when Scott Brown, the so-called Republican, replaced Kennedy in Massachusetts? Remember all of you cheered? And you said, oh, my God, he's the great white hope. He's going to save America. And he lied to you, Brown, and he said he'd be the 41st vote against President Barack Obama's sweeping health care overhaul, right? Remember I warned you that he's a liar? Remember I said to you I've seen the show The Brotherhood on Showtime sufficient to know he's just a lying politician? Well, who was right, you or me? Who was right, you or me, in Massachusetts? Who has he turned out to be, Brown? Was I right, or were those of you who thought because he had an R next to his name, were you right? The answer, my friends, is written in the wind. And the fact of the matter is that in large part, Romney is identical to this man, a hybrid candidate who's trying to connive both sides to put him into the White House. So what does it really matter? Well, I'll tell you why it really matters, because although he's a hybrid, Romney is a hybrid that has both liberal and conservative tendencies, while Obama is by no means a hybrid. Obama is a distinct hard-left radical. Obama stands for overturning virtually every institution of freedom in the United States of America as fast as he can. But where did he get these ideas from? That's what I'm getting at. In other words, Obama was a very young man when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was already out of law school. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as far as I can tell, is one of the chief architects of virtually all of the anti-American bile that comes out of the mouths of so many of the of our younger acolytes. Jimmy Carter is another fanatic leftist of the same generation. And they have a hatred for this country and its people unlike any I've never read about anything like this. So when Ginsburg goes to Egypt and lies to you and says that it's an inspiring time while it's not an inspiring time, that's lie number one. And then she says she would draft the Constitution, she'd look at the Constitution not of the United States but of that of South Africa. Listen to now how she stabs America in the back in clip three.
Well, I can't speak about what the Egyptian experience should be because I'm operating under a rather old constitution. The United States, in comparison to Egypt, is a very new nation. And yet we
stop
have
right
the...
there. Did you hear? We're a very new nation. Again, somewhat embarrassed by the fact that we're not as rife with history as the land of the pharaohs, the land of the pyramids. We're just a new country to her. And what do we really know? What do we know, this Ruth Bader Ginsburg? What do we know to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a woman born in Brooklyn, New York in 1933, steeped in a hatred for America that is hard to understand unless you yourself were born in New York, as I was. I was born a decade after her. And I know the mind of the New York liberal. I know the hatred they have for this country. I know the visceral fear they have for the average person. I know the desires that the liberal has for this nation. I know them in my DNA. And liberalism, as I pointed out in one of my earlier books, is a mental disorder. For a Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whose ancestors fled the tyranny of Russia, no doubt, to spit on this Constitution, to spit on the United States of America like this, is disgusting, to say the least. Despicable, to say the least. But that unto itself is nothing. She should be impeached immediately. There should be movements to impeach her for un-American statements and un-American activities. You heard me. Back in the 1950s, there was a House of Un-American Activities Committee, HUAC, the bane of the communists in the United States of America. They feared it. They hated it. They reviled it. They made movies about it. But unfortunately for them, it was 100% right. Most of what HUAC went after, most of who HUAC went after, were hardcore operatives of the Soviet Union. As proven years later by the Venona Papers published by the Soviets after the fall of the Soviet Empire. Yes, there were and are communists in the movie industry. Yes, there were and are communists in the government of Barack Obama.
Savage.
So we sit here in wonderment how a woman as hard left as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was the chief counsel for the ACLU, could be sitting on the Supreme Court to begin with and go to Egypt and stab America in the back and not be censored by Congress. At the same time, Iran is threatening to strike us in the United States of America. That's right. Iran is warning us that they will release agents in this country and cause death and destruction, and we do nothing. We have a military shaking in its boots, seeing how fast they can integrate as many non-combatants into the military as possible, while taking out the warriors as fast as possible. We have a military destroying the U.S. Navy under this leader called Panetta, who was put in strictly to destroy the military, so far as I could tell, handpicked by the liberal establishment to decimate the military. Decimate the military, indeed, is what he is doing. The Navy is now operating at a level as small as it has since World War I under Obama. And we have a far-left, pacifist, fanatic leftist, whatever you want to call him, in the White House, who is sitting there letting Iran get away with virtual murder. Is it murder they're getting away with, or attempts at murder? Iran is saying it's developing a missile that could hit the United States of America with a 6,000-mile range. 6,000-mile range. And we're sitting here waiting for them to develop the missile. Is that what we're doing? That's what the most powerful military in the world does. It sits here and waits to be struck by Iran. Well, I know the Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, and perhaps that's more important. But at the same time, one nuclear missile can destroy your day. And it doesn't distinguish between communist, capitalist, socialist, laborite, black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, whatever. Really doesn't discriminate at all any more than a bacterium does. Yet we're sitting here waiting to be struck again. At the same time, let's bring up Israel, because every day it's Israel, Israel, Israel. I'm getting sick of it. I'm getting sick of hearing the same story. that Israel's going to do this, and Israel's going to do that, and Israel's about to strike Iran, and Iran is about... I am sick of it. I am tired of hearing it. As I said yesterday, either they should do it or stop talking about it. It's like the bagel that cried lox a few too many times. Do it already. Stop telling us already you're going to do it. And yet we hear that they're split over attacking Iran. That is Obama and Netanyahu. Obviously, Obama has contempt for Israel. They want Israel to just go away, as do most of the Muslim nations. They like Israel to disappear. And Obama grew up in that universe where Israel was just a thorn in the side of the world, and Israel shouldn't exist. We know that that's Obama's orientation. I don't care what he says. You know how he sees the world, the same way your liberal cousins do, which is that Israel should disappear. And so they're fighting over whether or not Israel has a right to survive and whether or not it has a right to preemptively attack Iran. And here's Leon Panetta, again, the man who has done more to take apart the U.S. military than any man in human history. And he's saying that he's over there telling Israel not to defend themselves. Wait, sit there and wait. Wait there, Israel, until half of your country is gone, and maybe we'll give you permission if it's not in an election year. So that's the world we're living in, and this is what we have to make sense out of, which is why most of us tune out. We can only deal with what is, not what might be. We can only deal with what is. We in talk radio have to deal with not only what is, but what might be. Otherwise, there's no point listening to the radio. You can get what is from a headline in a newspaper box. You can get what is from the Stooges on television. But can you get what might be from the Stooges on television? Can you get what might be from the Stooges who write for the dead newspapers? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe someplace you can. And so I feel I have an obligation to talk about what might be if the dictator is reelected. What might be? That's what we're talking about. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Pittsburgh, Bill, you're on the program. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael Savage. I believe an Obama report card has to be front and center. I hope to God that Mitt Romney goes for the jugular and says, I went to Harvard, here's my grades. Now, I want to see your grades. I went to Harvard, I sat in this class, I earned this type of grade, I learned this. What did you learn while you were at Harvard? What did you learn at Columbia? What did you learn at Occidental? John McCain's record was way out there, that he was near the bottom of his class, and it's just despicable, the media. So we need it.
You mean by the media who kept mocking John McCain when he ran for office, the little rats, the little Solenterates, the little worms, the little subterraneans like Wolf Blitzer?
I actually was a volunteer for him when I was in college out in Arizona State.
The subterraneans like Wolf Blitzer have a merciless hatred for the United States of America. The subterraneans on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News, the subterraneans in the media have a visceral hatred for this country. Yeah, he's right. Romney should go for the jugular, but it won't happen. Romney will not go for the jugular. Romney will not win. Because Romney will get up there, and Romney will treat him like a nice guy who's simply slightly misguided. He'll parse the truth. He'll try to make people like him. And the minute you try to make people like you, you're finished for two reasons. Because the Republicans will vote for you, Mitt, as the Democrats will vote for the other guy. But it's the 15% of undecided, like those who listen to the Savage Nation, who you hate, who you despise, I was told by someone who spoke to you, by the way, Mr. Romney. I hope this gets back to you. I heard you on a recent trip somewhere in America, and you spoke to someone who knows this show, and you said, oh, yes, I know Michael Savage, but I won't go on his show. That's what I was told, because I was told, Mitt Romney, you hate conservatives. Is that true, Mitt Romney? Do you really hate conservatives? Well, Mitt Romney, if you hate conservatives, why should they vote for you, is the question. In New York on WOR, Daniel, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. I just want to say you're on point with everything that you said about Ginsburg, but I want to take it a step further, and because I've been observing the rot of the American culture for several decades now. Ginsburg, in my opinion, has remained on the Supreme Court under her own volition as a subversive element, I believe working in conjunction with the feminist movement, the radical feminist movement, and also in conjunction with another element of our culture, the black culture, and they view the Constitution, even though she's supposed to interpret it and protect it, as a mechanism of bondage. The black culture never got over slavery. Women never got over suffrage. And in the third element is this: is the onslaught of...
When you say that, wait, when you, I want to clarify your terms. You say they never got over, meaning that they're still angered by it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And I'm gonna draw this down to a conclusion real quick. And also, the third element of this prong of subversion is the onslaught of the tens of millions of illegals to America who know nothing, care nothing about the Constitution, care nothing about the American traditions or values, and they view the Constitution, that is, the foreigners, white women in particular, and the black culture as a piece of a toilet paper that was penned by white men for white men. And all of this is boiling down to one thing: to marginalize, eradicate, and extinguish the white male from the American family, the American culture, and Western civilization. And that is the bottom line to it all.
Daniel, you know, I don't disagree with the word you just said. I see the world the same way you do.
America's imploding.
Same way the world you do. The white male is the most endangered species in the United States of America. It is targeted by the subterraneans in the media, targeted by all of the pressure groups, and hated and reviled by the ad agencies who continue to make mockery of white males. Have you noticed the ads in America? How much further do you have to go than how white males are shown in American TV ads? Have you seen it? The woman is always smarter. The woman is always the boss. The man is always the schlemiel, the moron, the worm, the idiot.
No, Michael, it's worse than that. They are depicted as either being effeminate, feminized, sissified, submissive, impotent, or cowardly. We're depicted as being pedophiles, rapists, murderers, psychopaths, sociopaths, stalkers, philanderers. It is the most.
Hey, Daniel, you're pretty good. Are you? Do you write for a living?
No. I told you, I'm sort of like a cultural. I don't know. Junkie, I guess you could say.
Okay, but what are you? I'm just curious. What do you do for a profession?
Oh, well, I kind of do surveillance. So when I say this, on any given year, Dr. Savage, I observe anywhere from 200,000 to 300,000 people a year. It is the most amazing. I could tell you some stories that really would make your jaw drop. But the bottom line is, sadly, and I just want to say this. I really want to say this to the American white male. You have to get your heads out of pornography, gambling, and video games, and the idolizing of sports.
And also get the hat on backwards off your head and put it on forwards. You can watch sports, but I would appreciate it if they knew more about who is stealing their freedoms and their children's future than what the batting average is of a baseball player.
I absolutely agree. It's just, anyway, I just think, okay, I just want to say one other thing. I'm going to let you go. When Obama announced his candidacy for the presidency or the nomination for the Democratic nod years ago, when 90% of America thought Hillary Clinton was going to get it, I saw him. And I said, he was going to be our next president. And I said, when he's elected president, he's going to be reelected again. And it's a culture. I say, observe the culture. And I remember seeing a couple of...
Hold on, that's easy to say. You said that. So now let's mark this down for February 3, 2012. What does your crystal ball say? Will he get reelected?
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be reelected. And it's a cultural phenomenon. And it has to do with not the news media being in bed with him. It has nothing to do with 100% of the, close to 100% of the black culture voting for him. It has nothing to do with 100% of the homosexual community. It has nothing to do with about 70 or 80% of the Spanish culture. It is the largest and most dedicated voting bloc in America that are going to vote for him, that voted him into office the first time and will do it again, and that is the American white female, because of their love and lust and aggressive pursuit, wedding and betting and pro-guarantee.
Well, now you're moving into an area I can't agree with you. You're going to say white women are marrying blacks and having children, and that's the constituency that's going to elect Obama?
The rejection, Michael, is part of the rejection of the white male in our culture. That's why we have an epidemic of lesbians.
Well, I have to disagree with you, because an awful lot of blue-collar white men were bamboozled by Obama and thought that he really represented change. I think you're wrong on that.
Emasculated white male, you're absolutely right. Half of them, like I said, are...
I wouldn't even call them emasculated. I would call them just moronic white males who don't even know who they are, let alone who Obama is to this day. So do you think that when Obama wins again against the fall guy, Mitt Romney, who's going to lose if he is the nominee, do you agree with me that Gingrich is working for Obama?
I don't think he's working for Obama. See, I view politics in probably a different light.
All right, wait, let's just answer simply. Okay, so he's not working for the Democrats, but he may as well be. Do you think if Obama is reelected in November, he will eliminate term limits and be president for life like Idi Amin?
You know what? All I can say is when he is reelected, if you're really upset at what you've seen over the last few years, you ain't seen nothing yet.
All right. On that note, we'll move along. It's 46 minutes after the hour on this Friday when most of you have your hats on backwards or about to twist your hat on backwards so you can watch the Super Bowl. I'll be right back.
Savage.
All the way.
Now we're told that Iran is going to attack sites in the United States of America, especially Jewish-related sites. And this is I don't know whether this is disinformation being put out by Israel in order to get Americans on their side or whether there's a validity to this. I have no idea, but there was an Israeli warning of the following. In the past few weeks, there's been an escalation in threats against Israeli and Jewish targets around the world, one regional document noted. Open source reported many demonstrations against Israel expected, blah, blah, blah. And they could turn violent at local synagogues, restaurants, the Israeli embassy, and other Israeli sites. And so now they're warning you that anybody could be a terrorist. And it says, according to our evaluation, there's a possibility that the forged passports will be used in order to pass as Israeli citizens at the security checks in Israel and around the world. Israeli securities may consider an Israeli citizenship as a criterion to proceed with a more lenient security check in secure sites such as airports. Now we read that Big Sis here in America is telling hot dog vendors and other such individuals to be very watchful at the Super Bowl game and to see and tell, show and tell. In other words, they want hot dog vendors at the Super Bowl to be on the lookout for potential terrorists. I have no idea what a hot dog vendor can do for us or what the training might be. I think they were saying look out for anyone who was using a cell phone. That should eliminate about, 0.001% of the population. Look for anyone who's making notes on a piece of paper. So now if you write on a piece of paper or use a cell phone, you're on the watch list now of the Department of Homeland Security at the Super Bowl game. It's beyond belief. They're tapping hot dog sellers at the Super Bowl to be on the lookout for terrorists. Now, I do not know if this includes those selling Hebrew National hot dogs. We'll have to. I don't think we can get an answer from the TSA on this. But the TSA is training Super Bowl hot dog sellers to spot terrorists. We do not know if they're training only those who sell Hebrew National hot dogs or excluding those who sell Hebrew National hot dogs, or we do not even know if, in fact, Hebrew National hot dogs are sold at the Super Bowl. I have no idea what is sold. I'm not up on my hot dogology, but we're trying to get an answer from the TSA and through the Homeland Security, but we can't get an answer on the exact sellers that they are using, at the ball games here. See something, say something as part of the Viper team. Why do government wonks like acronyms like Viper? Visible Intermodal Prevention and Response. Are they that idiotic that they think that if they write up an acronym like this, it makes them smart? This is so college-y. Okay, so that's the world we're living in now. Congress is giving them more money now, by the way. They're giving the most inefficient department in American history, the DHS, more money to spy on American citizens and more money to make sure that they don't look at the potentials who actually might cause an incident in the country. For example, here's an article out of the Associated Propagandists. Document shows NYPD eyed Shiites based on religion. Duh. Who would you look at if you were looking for terrorists in New York City? Well, of course, you'd look at Shiite Muslims if you had a brain. But the suspicious, anti-American, dangerous organizations in cahoots with the ACLU are attacking the NYPD because they said, we want to increase our surveillance of thousands of Shiite Muslims and their mosques based on their religion as a way to sweep the Northeast for signs of Iranian terrorists. Wouldn't that make sense if you were trying to do proactive work to make sure that an attack didn't occur? And that's no good because now Muslim pressure groups are going after the NYPD for doing the job that we all want them to do, the job that the federal government refuses to do, which is to protect us from a real terrorist attack, as opposed to spying on American citizens under the guise of protecting us against a terrorist attack. Police estimated the New York area Shiite population to be about 35,000, with Iranians making up about 8,500. The NYPD document also calls for canvassing the Palestinian community because there might be terrorists there. And they wrote, "The Palestinian community, although not Shia, should also be assessed due to presence of Hamas members and sympathizers and the group's relationship with the Iranian government," close quote. Do you disagree with that? If you were charged with protecting people in New York, who would you investigate? Would you look at white males in a Catholic church? Would you look at nuns, perhaps? The nuns would be the ones carrying the bombs. Would you look at those who were crippled by polio as children, who are on crutches, the type the TSA seems to focus upon because they're the most defenseless? Would you frisk little children 3 years old, and would you investigate nursery schools? No, you'd look at groups that have large Iranian populations, since Iran is now threatening us. But, as you well know, there's a concerted effort to make certain that every police department in America knuckles under to the suspicious, dangerous CAIR, Council on Arab American Islamic Relations, so-called. To me, CAIR, and this is one man's opinion, is very much like the German Bund in the 1930s. I don't know if you know who the German Bund was. The German Bund pretended to be a friendship society of Americans who wanted better relations with the emerging Nazi party in Germany, Hitler's party, in other words. And so there was an American-German friendship league. They turned out to be nothing but spies for the Nazis. To me, this group CAIR is the most dangerous group in the United States of America. But then again, that's only one man's opinion. As you well know, they've attacked me in the past, and so therefore I'm on their watch list, probably also the U.S. government's watch list.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Super Bowl weekend coming up, dangerous for women, pets, and other sensitive creatures, according to the radical feminist movement. Turns out it's all a lie, of course, put out by the propaganda arm of various and sundry organizations who target males who simply like sports. Now, of course, we have the TSA, in its inimitable wisdom, funding and training hot dog vendors and parking lot attendants, shuttle bus drivers, on how to assess potential terrorists. And here is what they're telling hot dog vendors at the Super Bowl to look for. If you're using a video camera, talking to police officers, wearing hoodies, driving a van, writing on a piece of paper, or using a cell phone or a recording application, you are potentially going to be hauled in by a hot dog vendor at the Super Bowl. If, on the other hand, you're a Shiite Muslim with a headscarf screaming Allah Akbar, running around with a sizzling piece of dynamite, you will not be hauled in for fear of violating any of the sensibilities of Council on American Islamic Relations and the other pressure groups like the ACLU. That's what's going on in the country. It's a madhouse, a lunatic asylum. So now we come back to the issue of Iran threatening Israel, Israel saying they got to do something, Obama saying to Israel, do nothing. And Iran then saying we're developing a 6,000-mile missile, reported in the Christian Science Monitor, that can strike the United States of America. And, of course, Iran then saying we're going to unleash our operatives in America on Jewish targets in the U.S., such as delicatessens, restaurants, synagogues, et cetera, which is pretty amazing that we sit here waiting to be hit, waiting to be slapped and do nothing in return. It's amazing to me, just astounding to have so many people running around with 40 caliber guns and do nothing to protect ourselves for fear that we'll offend any of the Muslim pressure groups, for example. So I want to ask you a couple of questions, but I think you know what the questions are. And so therefore I will go directly to the callers on the Savage Nation. If you'd rather I talk about Romney, I can guarantee you Romney is not going to ram the knee during the debate with Obama. I guarantee you Romney will be the nicest guy in the world and therefore lose the conservative base and get defeated. As I'm standing here, if I were a betting man, which I'm not, I haven't bet since I'm about 11 years old on anything, I would bet Obama's going to win by a fairly large margin if it's Romney versus him. The others don't even count. They can't even qualify any of the others on the ticket. All they're doing is serving Obama's purposes. The Democrats are laughing every night. They're going home with big smiles on their face over what they're doing to poor Romney. But Romney is his worst enemy. Romney, because of his nice guyness and his weakness, is his worst enemy. Because Romney will never say what needs to be said. Romney can't win. Romney will not get tough. Romney will not go for the jugular. Romney will not ask the hard questions. Romney will stand there and say, well, you're not really responsible for the recovery. I know that. But if I'm elected, free market and taxes and stuff. That's what he's going to say. That's going to be the end of the road. Obama will go in for the kill. He'll cut him to pieces. He'll cut him to ribbons. That's what's going to happen. So what can I say to you? It's very worrisome. It's a sad time in American history that the American people are virtually defenseless against the radical left that is running rife across the landscape of the U.S. Constitution, spitting on it, cutting it up. And now we have the shocking story, which I played in the first hour. And before we move on to the Israel-Iran thing, I have to play it again if you just joined us. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the former chief counsel for the anti-American, anti-family, anti-church ACLU, on the Supreme Court, appointed by none other than Bill Clinton, okay? Ruth Bader Ginsburg goes to Egypt and talks in glowing terms about the revolution that's occurring there, which is on the first face, delusional. That's number one in light of what's really happening. And two, here's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, lifetime America hater from Brooklyn, New York, stabbing America in the back in clip five.
You should certainly be aided by all the Constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II. I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a Constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done.
She's delusional. She's seditious. She's probably senile. This woman is delusional, seditious, and senile, in my opinion, and she should be impeached immediately. Will she be? No. Because there's no Republican Party, there's no opposition party whatsoever. It's the government versus the people in the United States of America, which is why you have such a contempt for Congress. You think you're stupid? You think you don't know what you see with your own eyes and hear with your own ears? You do know what you see and hear. This is what you're seeing and this is what you're hearing. Okay, so now let's move on to the nuts and bolts of what's likely to happen. Iran, Israel. Israel, Iran. Are you worried about it? Are you worried about it or not? North Carolina, Kyle, you're first up in this hour. Go ahead, please. Will Iran attack Israel, yes or no?
Michael, happy Friday to you. Listen, I don't understand why Israel's so paranoid. Iran's got their Palestinian Arab brothers right next door. Does Israel honestly think that they're going to get carpet bombed or nuked when, you know, like I said, Israel's... when the Palestinian Arab brothers are just right next door, I don't think Iran has that in their best interest.
I don't understand. Has what in their best interests?
Well, their buddies are just right next door. Why would Iran harm Israel?
Well, for one, they said they're going to wipe it off the map the minute they have the ability to do so. Ahmadinejad continues, repeats this over and over again. As near as the other day, one of the religious fanatics said that Israel's a cancer that's going to be wiped off the map. So what would you do if you were an Israeli?
Well, I honestly think in order to wipe Israel off the map, you'd have to harm the Palestinians. And I don't think that Iran really wants to do that. I think it's an empty threat.
Okay, well, do you actually think that the Iranians care about the Palestinians?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think that that's their basically their brothers right there.
Well, religiously, they're not. The Palestinians, as far as I know, are Sunni Muslims, by and large, while the Iranians are Shiites. So that's number one. And the division between the two is something that we Americans cannot quite grasp. It's far worse than Catholics versus Protestants, even in the worst days of the Irish Troubles. So you have to understand that there's a visceral hatred between these two groups that sometimes trumps their hatred for Jews and Christians, incidentally. I mean, witness them blowing up each other's weddings and funerals. You understand that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I work with a Palestinian native, and he sees Iran as sort of an ally in many regards.
All right, well, I hear you. That's one guy. Iran is no one's ally. Russia is Iran's ally. China is Iran's ally. And so, therefore, you have to ask yourself where we stand in the whole picture. Sacramento Joy, we have so many wonderful callers about other topics that are of direct concern to those of you with your hats about to be spun backwards to watch the Super Bowl. New York, WOR, Jason, welcome to the program.
You know, I'm really confused as to why Leon Panetta would openly express worry about Israel attacking Iran, okay? The implications of Iran getting a nuke are 10 times worse. You know, everyone's obsessed with what's going to happen if Israel attacks Iran. What's going to happen if Iran gets a nuke, okay?
Well, here's the thing. Look, we're in a strange position where Israel can't win no matter what it does. If it doesn't attack Iran and Iran gets the bomb and uses it on them, case closed. Israel will retaliate and wipe Iran off the map, which will trigger World War III. Two-thirds of the world's population can be wiped out. You know that could happen. That's how things happen. Russia could then strike Israel. God knows what could happen if that does evolve. If, on the other hand, Israel does strike Iran and does stop Iran from destroying their children, and Iran then sets off a terror campaign around the globe and closes the Straits of Hormuz, Israel gets blamed again. So at this point, Israel can't win. You understand that?
Well, at the same time, I'm also looking from a diplomatic standpoint. If Iran gets a nuke, they can close the Strait of Hormuz with impunity, and they'll say, you know, if you attack, you know, they'll be able to dictate things around there much easier than they ever have been able to in the past. And you know,
I really don't know. This is a biblical question rather than a political question, and I think we almost have to turn to the Bible to see what's coming, and what's coming is horrendous. What's coming can almost not be stopped. Those of you who believe in biblical prophecy probably know what I'm talking about. And rather than alarming a general audience who has long since abandoned any of the prophecies of the Bible, I don't really want to get into it. But the Bible's very clear on what is coming. It's Armageddon, by the way. Whether it shall occur tomorrow or the next day is another story. But they do predict rivers of blood. Victorious will be Israel, though, incidentally. And all of the Ahmadinejads of the world, all of the Hitlers, the reincarnated Hitlers of the world, will disappear. Read the Bible. I'll be back.
Savage.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone.
Gingrich steps up attacks on Romney before Nevada. And the rolling cannonball with white hair, the fat rolling tire, continues to debase Romney. It's shocking to see him doing the bidding of Obama like this. 1-800-449-8255. Israel, Iran, Super Bowl, White House, that house, my house, your house, everyone's house. What a world we're living in. And at the same time, we have Hollywood putting out anti-American, the most vile anti-American movies in the history of the country. There's not one movie that's come out about any of the wars that have been recently fought by the bravest and the best in our country that does not show them as broken victims who are anti-war. Not one film. Not one film showing the heroism of these men. Not one film. The twisted psychotics in Hollywood continue to put out the most vile anti-military movies that you could imagine. And they will never stop. They will never stop. Wisconsin, Jerry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'd just like to say Israel is like a caged animal. They're being squeezed on every side, and they're going to get a reaction out of them.
Well, you're a pragmatic man who understands reality. You push any animal too far, he's going to strike. Israel's being attacked by the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, and constrained by their cage keeper, Barack Obama, at the same time. So what do you think will happen?
I think they're going to go after them.
What, you mean Israel will go after Iran no matter what anyone does?
I believe they will. I don't think they have an option.
And then the world will turn against Israel again, no matter what they do. See, that's the point. No matter what Israel does, they're going to be hated anyway, so they may as well defend themselves. See, if I were playing the chess game or I was advising the Israeli government, I'd say do what you have to do to survive because you're going to be hated anyway. And that's the end of it. What do you think Jimmy Carter's going to tell? You know, if you go to the bottom of michaelsavage.com, there's a story that can rip your guts out. I don't care whether you eat meat or not. Bears kept in tiny cages by Chinese for their bile commit suicide with hunger strikes. You have to see this story, whether you're an animal lover as I am or not. You'll not believe how the Chinese brutalize animals. And what's even worse, it's not just that they brutalize these bears, because the pictures speak they speak volumes about what the Chinese are doing to them. They show an animal with a pair of eyes on it that any human being would look at this and say, this can't be going on in the world today. Then they show a throwback Chinese peasant with a big, beautiful animal tied upside down with its paws tied to the cage, with a throwback Chinese peasant inserting a device into its gut to suck out the bile from the animal twice a day. And then you see some decent people, probably good liberal people in England, with signs that say China banned bear farms now. God bless them all. God bless the animal rights activists. I'm going to try and give them some money, by the way. I'm concerned about the story, not only for the sake of the bears, but for the sake of the political prisoners in China who are treated much worse than the bears are, only you don't see any pictures about what they actually still do to the genuine Christians and the genuine dissidents in China. You think it's all sneakers and cars and BMWs and big apartment buildings in Shanghai. You're wrong. All I ask you to do is go to the article, Bears Kept in Tiny Cages by Chinese for Their Bile. The bears commit suicide with hunger strikes to escape the barbaric torture of their Chinese throwback masters. Ask some of your Vietnam veteran friends who may have been captured by their cohorts in Vietnam about their actual human rights record. Ask them how they were treated, and then you'll have some idea about how you're going to be treated, unless you get someone in the White House who understands the danger we're all in. How's that? Is that a full paragraph for you? Can you picture that one yet? Lisa in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to say God bless you for the knowledge that you give on your radio show. And I'm a new listener. I started listening in November. And it's scary, you know, and I've spent a lot of time educating myself. You know, you give the leads and I just dig further and it's, you know.
That's right. The more you peel the onion, the more rotten the onion looks.
Yeah. And
Lisa, it's very difficult to actually study what these people are doing to us and what our enemies would like to do to us. One picture is worth a thousand words. Take a look at the Chinese bear story on michaelsavage.com, and you will see what's liable to happen to your children and grandchildren.
Savage.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill.
You know, whether you're a biblical absolutist or you think it's all nonsense is almost irrelevant. But we're living in a very dangerous time. When you have throwbacks of the type that you have in Iran, they're mad, psychotic Hitlerites with headscarves wrapped in Islam. Here you got Iranian supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei saying that Israel is a cancerous tumor that should be cut and will be cut off and destroyed. Now, what man of religion would say that about another nation, knowing that it would kill men, women, and children? These are not religious people. They don't represent Islam, or do they? What do they represent? They are dangerous psychotics. Israel says, wait a minute, they've been threatening to destroy us for years. What do you want us to do? Well, Barack Obama, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Jimmy Carter, and the others say, do nothing, sit there and die. Pack your valises and leave. And the Jews say, well, we can't do that. We're not going to just die. We're not going to leave. We're going to defend ourselves. And as I say, it's very simple. It's a chess game at this point. It's a simple formula. Just use your mind. Whatever the Jews do, they're going to lose. But in one case, they'll be alive. In the other case, they'll be dead. So therefore, choose life. I'll be Israel's supreme leader. And whatever you do, you're going to be hated by the people who hate you anyway. No one ever loved you. No one ever will love you, except evangelical Christians in America, who your liberal Jewish brethren here in America hate with a passion you cannot even understand. If you were to actually understand how much your liberal Jewish brethren fear and hate the Christian conservative, you'd be appalled. But the very Christian conservative is the only segment in America that really loves you in Israel. They will still love you after you defend yourself. They'll love you even more. They will love that you were willing to still stand up for your life and your children. They will understand that you had to do it. No one else, though, will understand that nor love you in Israel. And so therefore, again, let's run the formula by. No matter what you do in Israel, you're going to be hated. In one case, you'll be alive. In the other case, you'll be dead. Therefore, choose life. That's all. It's very simple. Write it down. No hot dog vendor in the Super Bowl can tell you that. New York, Ezra, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on with millions of people who are listening around America.
In my opinion, everything points out to Israeli attack in the near future, especially Leon Panetta's comment yesterday. I think that comment came to flush out the Iranians because Israel doesn't know exactly where to attack. And by making that statement, the Iranians most probably will try to defend those locations, and then there will be more point of attack to know where to go.
But wait, what was the comment? The Israelis said they can attack every nuclear site in Iran. Didn't they say that?
Yes, but if you read the Israeli newspapers and all that, they don't know for certain all the locations. There is always debate in Israel if those are the accurate locations. So if the Iranians think that Israel is going to attack, most likely they will try to establish more defenses around the real locations where Israel may attack. So then,
no matter what Israel does, the Ron Paul voters are going to hate Israel anyway. You know that.
Yes, I.
You want to make this a political situation? Let's make it very political. If Israel wanted to attack Iran, preemptively strike their nuclear facilities to keep their children and their babies alive, who would support them? Obama would attack them. Romney would probably support Israel. I'm pretty sure Romney would support that move. Gingrich would support that move. Santorum would support that move. But Ron Paul would condemn Israel. Am I right?
100%, yes. And Jimmy Carter.
All right. Now let's go to the American voter. What do you think the American voter would think about Israel striking Iran because they have a very real possibility of disappearing from the earth if they don't? And the Iranians counter-striking here in America, killing Americans, blowing things up, closing bridges and tunnels. God knows what they might do. But certainly the price of gasoline going up by $2 or $3 a gallon, because the oil companies would use any attempt by the Iranians to close the Strait of Hormuz, even if it was unsuccessful, to jack up their prices, since the oil industry, as you well know, is a monopoly. What do you think the average American would think of Israel and the Jews at that point? They'd hate them. And then we would hear the very same logic, rhetoric that we heard when Franklin Delano Roosevelt took America to war against Nazi Germany, that the Jews dragged us into World War II. You know that, don't you?
Yes, but I think at this time the American public would support Israel because Americans have a sense of survival and they would respect a small country trying to...
Well, you see, you have to say which America would support Israel. The Christian conservative would back Israel 100%. Do you think the liberal American Jews that you know would support Israel?
No.
No. They would support Iran before they would support Israel. Do you think that the vermin in Hollywood, many of whom are Jewish liberals, would support Israel? You know they wouldn't. They hate Israel. They identify with Israel's enemies. They identify with criminals. You understand how Hollywood works. Every actor in America would attack Israel. So they'd have a public relations nightmare. No matter what they do, they're going to lose. You know that. But in one case, they live. In the other case, they die. Therefore, choose life.
Absolutely. That's what...
That's all. That's all. If a man comes to kill your... to blow up your mother's house, blow up his mother's house first. You know who wrote that? Let me repeat that. If a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put a bomb in his mother's house first. Whoever knows who quoted that gets a free copy of Abuse of Power. The lines are open at 1-800-449-8255. And incidentally, the man who wrote that was, for decades, a liberal icon. But as liberals have increasingly become fascistic, all of the icons they grew up with have been thrown overboard because of the inconvenient truths that their once liberal iconic heroes once proclaimed. So there's no answer. No one knows who that is. I'll give you the answer. The answer is George Orwell. George Orwell, one of the greatest minds of the last century, wrote, "If a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put a bomb in his mother's house first." George Orwell wrote some amazing books that liberals all grew up on. You'd think they would still love George Orwell. But no, they've been so brainwashed that all of their early cultural heroes have been obliterated from their mind and turned into so-called reactionaries because the liberal today is not the liberal of 40 years ago. The liberal of today is in their own right, a reactionary. The liberal of today is the true reactionary, and in fact, they're a very dangerous reactionary force in the United States of America. But this is getting into communist and anti-communist rhetoric that most Americans don't understand. I'd rather stick to hot dogs and the Super Bowl. 1-800-449-8255. Let's make it simple, A and B. Israel, Iran. Should Israel attack Iran to defend itself, or should it just disappear off the face of the earth? Of course, if you're a Ron Paul voter, the latter is the truth. If you are an Obama supporter, you'd rather see Israel disappear than Iran. There's no question. If you're Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you'd rather see Iran survive rather than Israel. You understand how the world works? Okay, let's go to the callers again on the program. Sacramento's been holding a long time. Jerry, thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Thank you. My name's Jerry. I'm here to tell you that as a former naval officer, middle grade lieutenant commander, that the wild card is not Israel's Air Force striking Iran. No, it's really Saudi Arabia. They're covert military operating behind the scenes. They are more than likely the ones that were behind some of these assassinations regarding the scientists working on the nuclear program there.
Yeah. That's interesting. And that's because what? The Saudis have such deep penetration inside Iran?
Saudis have their covert ops the same as the United States military people do.
And there's some phenomenal operatives, aren't they?
They are operatives. They are like our Navy SEAL CIA operatives.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're alleging, in your opinion, as an ex-naval officer, that you believe it will be Saudi Arabia in conjunction with Israel that will attack Iran, or Saudi Arabia by itself?
No, Saudi Arabia uses Americans as Hessians. We are the Hessians for Saudi Arabia in order to bring the strong horse to the front. By that I mean this Arab Spring is a misnomer. What we're seeing, and as a historian, I know you can appreciate this, we're having an Islamic world awakening, and the competition is between Iran and Saudi Arabia for who is going to be the strong horse, the leader of it all. And Saudi Arabia doesn't care if all of us, including the Russians, get into it, because we're looking at a hot war here, a modern war. Okay, what they're all arguing about is the Iranians' capacity to put together a bomb. But the reality is, according to the intel reports I've seen, they've already got at least 5 to 7 or more nuclear-tipped missiles as of 2007. So
Pardon me. Who has these missiles?
The Iranians have these missiles. They got them from our good friends, the Red Chinese and the North Koreans, who also gave them silkworm missile technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what do you see happening, Jerry?
Under the military, and I've been listening to you for years, and you are on the money, Dr. Sav.
Well, Jerry, what do you see happening? What do you see coming down the road?
Regrettably, I think we're going to end up going into a war, reluctantly, slowly, but we're going to end up going into a modern world war. And I think it's going to be a limited, that's almost laughable, nuclear war. But bear in mind, World War II was a limited nuclear war, although only one side had the bomb at the time. But it's scary what I could tell you about what the war planners are looking at. And we're looking at a world war with a first strike by the Soviets, possibly, and the United States in response, of course, because we would never preemptively do that.
But isn't Obama rushing to denuke us?
Even Obama, as bad a leader, in my opinion, as he is, and what he's done to the military morally, he doesn't have, at least yet, that kind of authority.
You know, it's interesting you should say that. I heard that from another highly placed former operative, that there's a shadow government that's still in charge, thank God, still protecting us. Do you agree with that?
I do. That's a fact. They're still patriots. There are those in high positions in our military, thank God, that still believe.
So how does a man like Panetta get so much authority to decimate the military like this, reducing the naval forces to a level not seen since World War One, cutting back on the military size when we're about to go into such a hot war that you project? Why would he be doing this at this time?
Well, that's just it. When you have, I know this will sound strange, when you have, they kind of let all these multinational corporations out of they let the genie out of the bottle, so to speak. That's why you've seen it, Dr. Savage. All of our industry, computer technology, it's all leaving the country. That's why we're in such a mess economically. The one-worlders don't really care that much about us. That's why you see around, you can see around us, we're all turning into almost a banana republic.
You mean with the flood of illegal aliens from Mexico literally being welcomed by the Obama administration and states that try to defend themselves being attacked by the Justice Department? It's almost a plan to annihilate this nation?
They want plenty of population here because they're going to need it after this nuclear strike. They're going to need the people. And I believe they know that. That's why they're letting in all these people, is because we're going to get hit, and we're going to get hit hard, not just out there in the Middle East theater. It's going to be involving our West Coast and possibly Hawaii. Look at Obama holding down our military, and we're watching the missiles fly from North Korea over towards Hawaii and over Japan, for crying out loud. I mean, if that's not insanity and telegraphing our weakness to our enemies, and our enemies are...
Well, you sound like you're part of the old Navy as opposed to the diverse Navy of today, where they're trying to use the ships as floating brothels or floating birthing clinics. I'm sure you saw all of that going on while you were still in the service.
It was beginning. Some of us.
Do you know that I had a naval? I went aboard a ship, and I'm not going to say when. It was in port, and it was nighttime. It was, you know, open to the public. And a naval officer told me his father, lifetime Navy, was thrown out of the Navy because he had a copy of one of my books on his desk. A militant feminist naval officer, you can pretty much picture the type, saw my book on his desk and she threw him out of the Navy after about 20 years of service. He told me that he is afraid, and so are the officers, of fear walking the decks of his ship at night because the Crips and the Bloods have control of the decks of the ship at night. He said it's like a gang war on the decks of the ships. That's how bad it is. It is though with the Russian Navy in the year 1910, the Potemkin. It's like the battleship Potemkin. We're weaker than we've ever been under this character in the White House. He has a vulture cutting the military to the bone, and you're telling us that the world is getting ready to go into a war state? How is that possible?
You know,
well, look, we could do this. You know what I'm going to ask you to do? Please call the show again next week or the next time you see an opportunity to do so. Give this gentleman a priority to get on the show. Send him a copy of Abuse of Power because he's going to love Jack Hatfield. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, every once in a while I get a caller who sends chills on my spine. That last caller, if you listened to it, knew what he was talking about. He spoke with authority, and it's certainly plausible. Say, come on, it can't happen. We have such a genius in the White House and such a coterie of brilliant people from the universities around Obama. They can't let that happen. After all, this is the man who saved the United States of America from the worst economy in a million years. Yeah, he's not going to let that happen. Well, he has good friends in the Muslim world. Didn't Hillary Clinton have a reset with Russia? They're not going to do anything against us. Hillary Clinton's on top of that one. She's got them under her thumb. Just everything she does is just brilliant. She's the most popular woman in the history of the world, according to the Associated Press and the other outlets of her publicity. No, this can't happen. But yes, see, this is how things do happen. One day you wake up and you read 9/11 happened, or you watch it on television while drinking coffee if you're not in New York, and you say, I can't believe what I'm watching. But you're watching an attack on our soil, and it happens. And he's saying it's going to happen again, only this time in spades. Now, I don't know whether to believe him. I have no idea. Why couldn't it happen? When you have a president who tramples on the Constitution, who has usurped the Constitution, who has imposed the equivalent of martial law in America, should he desire to do so, with the NDAA, while you partied on New Year's Eve, he passed the National Defense Authorization Act, which had a little rider attached to it. The rider said the military can arrest any American citizen on U.S. soil without a writ of habeas corpus, and they don't care. They can take you away in a black car the way they were doing in Argentina under Pinochet, Chile under Pinochet. You now have Pinochet in the White House. But the very liberal vermin who told us about military dictatorships support this military dictatorship under Obama. The very same rats in Hollywood who couldn't get enough of their vitriolic hatred for the Pinochet regime and the generals in South America are thrilled with the military dictatorship under their man in the White House. So therefore, we the people are facing some pretty dangerous months ahead. And what do we have on the other side? He said, he said, he said, he said, he said, he did, he said, he said. And Fatso is running around ripping Romney. That's all Fatso can do is attack people. Fatso is attacking Romney. That's the reverse party, the opposition party.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
very inspiring time that you have overthrown a dictator and that you are striving to achieve a genuine democracy. So I think people in the United States are hoping that this transition will work and that there will genuinely be a government of, by, and for the people. I met with the head of the Election Commission. I think that the first step has gone well, that elections have been held for the lower house that everyone has considered to be free and fair. So that's one milestone. And the next will be the drafting of a constitution.
Well, here's the news. Is Iran trying to develop a missile that could reach America 6,000 miles from Tehran? Oh, yes. Even the far-left Christian Science Monitor is concerned. I guess they realize that one nuke can even hurt liberals. Now, many of you don't know how crazy Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. Many of you don't know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the most dangerous woman in America. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the former chief counsel for the anti-American. Here's the news. Is Iran trying to develop a missile that could reach America? Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been on the U.S. Supreme Court for too many years. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if you can believe this, gave a speech to Egyptians, calling it an inspiring time in Egypt right now. It's beyond comprehension, the delusion of liberalism, how even in the face of despotism, authoritarianism, a dictatorship has emerged in Egypt under the Muslim Brotherhood. And yet this whack job, Ruth Ginsburg, goes to Egypt and says it's an inspiring time. You're striving to attain a genuine democracy. And then, wait a minute, she says, don't use the U.S. Constitution as a model for your country. She said, look to South Africa. Look to South Africa for your constitution. Liberalism is a dangerous mental disorder.
You should certainly be aided by all the constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II. I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done. Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, Canada has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It dates from 1982. You would almost certainly look at the European Convention on Human Rights. So, yes, why not take advantage of what there is elsewhere in the world?
Also on MichaelSavage.com, Scott Brown, Massachusetts, embracing Obama. Remember I told you who he was? I was the only one in the media who knew it. Remember I said that? Right. What else is in the news? Couples who marry for love are hunted down in Pakistan. They're declared untouchables for defaming the family name. From the LA Times, smugglers allegedly use black drivers to avert suspicion at the border. I guess Mexicans understand in America there's a double standard. Computer hackers breached the FBI and Scotland Yard. How do you like that? Well, I guess they were so busy focusing on American patriots that they didn't notice they were being hacked. You know, Jews shifting toward GOP under Obama. I don't believe it. What else is in the news? Fort Hood murderer trial delayed until June by the Obama administration to cover it up. Obama pushes communism because of Jesus, he says.
If I'm willing to give something up as somebody who's been extraordinarily blessed and give up some of the tax breaks that I enjoy, I actually think that's going to make economic sense. But for me as a Christian, it also coincides with Jesus' teaching that for unto whom much is given, much shall be required. It mirrors the Islamic belief that those who've been blessed have an obligation to use those blessings to help others, or the Jewish doctrine of moderation and consideration for others.
It's all on MichaelSavage.com. Obama's divided America. Did you see Savage's USA Today column, Marine's Honor Desecrated by Media? Well, you can still have a chance to read. You still have a chance to read it. By the way, we have a free Savage Nation newsletter on my website. Costs you nothing. You click on it and you get a free newsletter from Savage. It offers all things Savage. TSA screener arrested for swiping $5,000 from passenger. How do you like that? Palestinian TV, wonderful people, those Palestinians. Oh, yes. They say that their children were created to be fertilizer for their future. I'm not making it up. Go look at the story. Father killed daughter when crying interrupted a video game. Here's one if you really want to throw up and get sick. I don't know if you should look at it on the bottom of the page at MichaelSavage.com. Bears kept in tiny cages by the Chinese for their bile are committing suicide with hunger strikes. Nice folks, the Chinese government, Chinese people over there. Just like you and I. Maybe Ruth Bader Ginsburg should tell us to look to the Chinese Constitution. Caged bear in the province of Ha Tay in Vietnam. Wildlife campaigners say they have seen bears deliberately starve themselves to death. Take a look at the eyes in this poor creature. What those monsters, those SOBs, those vermin do to them over there. Where's the Human Rights Commission? Its paws tied to the side of the cage, a helpless bear has bile removed through a tube in its stomach. The painful process is generally carried out twice a day by human rats. A bear called Ben Ben, rescued from a farm in China's Lung province after 8 years, is transferred to a bear rescue center in Chengdu. What else? China banned bear farms now, say some nice people in England. Not all England are crazy. Not all people in England are crazy. Some of them understand what the Chinese people will do. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. There's more to the story. If you think what the Chinese do to bears is awful, take a guess what they do to humans that dare violate their political system. God bless those who protect the animals. One of the most cruel, barbaric stories I've seen in my life. Stop buying Chinese junk and put them out of business.
Savage.
The Constitution, as important as it is, will mean nothing unless the people are yearning for liberty and freedom. If the people don't care, then the best Constitution in the world won't make any difference. So the spirit of liberty has to be in the population. And then the Constitution, first, it should safeguard basic fundamental human rights, like our First Amendment is the right to speak freely, to publish freely without the government as a censor.
Samurai of Talk Radio, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I think I need a vacation. I'd like to go to a campground for about 3 weeks. Play some jazz for me. I'm running out of steam here. I'm thinking of buying a campground because I don't want to go to one where anybody is there, actually. Look, I'm a loner. What can I tell you? If I have to listen to somebody for 1 minute, I go berserk. No, let me talk about that for a minute. Turn off the music. It's of Placer County, California, which is has some of the most gorgeous lakes in the world. Gold Lake and things like that. So there's campgrounds up there that are on Forest Service land that are on long-term leases that the owners have. They have like five cabins. You know, some of them are rather primitive. Beautiful log cabins that I dreamed about as a boy. No television. You know what I'm saying? So I said, well, why don't I buy one of those lodges with five cabins, you know what I'm saying, and invite nobody there, just be me and Teddy. Because I actually think at this phase of my life, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I don't think I could handle it anymore. Maybe when I was young, yes. But at this stage of my life, I don't think I could be alone in the woods anymore. I don't have a Thoreau thing in me. A lot of people go crazy, by the way, when they go back to nature. They don't tell you about that. Oh, yeah, it's a famous story. In the 60s, there was a couple. I forget who they were. They went back to nature. They were heroes of the liberals in the commie left, the peacenik back to earth movement. And they moved to Alaska to get away from it all, right? And they used to write articles. They lived 6 months in Alaska in the outback, and then 6 months they live in the Caribbean when it got cold. So, all right, they have it both ways. All right, it's their business. Eventually, the guy walked into a propeller blade of a plane. He couldn't take it anymore. Just him and his long-toothed wife, you know what I'm saying? And the mosquito. Him and the mosquito and the wife, he walked into the propeller of the plane that came to get him. This is the problem. You can't do the back-to-nature thing anymore. It's too late. Thoreau is dead. Sacramento, Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, greetings from all your fans born in 1981.
Hey, thank you.
Recently, I went on a hike way up in the hills there and found a crystal clear, ice-cold lake, and I went swimming in it, and it was one of the most refreshing things I can remember in the past. I wondered if you were a swimmer, and if you...
I am. I'm a very good swimmer. I'm a former lifeguard. I haven't saved anybody's life, but I'm a former lifeguard. Yeah, I'm a very good swimmer to this day. And the question is what, Tony?
Do you take advantage lately of the ice-cold, beautiful mountain?
You know, you're raising a very interesting point. I've read that immersing yourself in ice-cold water, although it's shocking, is one of the most healthful things you can do. I have an aversion to cold water. I don't really like cold water, Tony. Maybe what I need right now is throw myself in San Francisco Bay. I don't mean off the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm saying pull my boat into a cove. It's 58 degrees, the water, though. That's the thing. It's cold.
No, go up to a lake up on Mount Lassen and take a dive.
What's the water temperature in a lake up there?
I don't know, but it was perfect. Probably a little bit warmer than 58 degrees.
Okay. Well, I remember there was an area in Alpine Meadows, California, that's a stunning. There's an area called Five Lakes. You probably don't know that area. In 1980, I was hiking up there a lot with family when the kids were young. I even was able to backpack one of my children on my back all the way to the top of the lake. You get up there in August, there's still snow on the ground, which to me is miraculously beautiful. And the lake, the ice is finally melted out in late August. The water is like ice water. You know what I mean, Tony? And at that time, Mrs. S. swam in that lake. I couldn't even put a toe in it. Some people have a capacity for cold water. I don't have it.
You should try again.
Yeah, you mean maybe it'll snap me out of my malaise?
It might do something for you.
Yeah, it could give me a heart attack altogether. Or either way, it's better off than what I have now. Oh, God, I shouldn't get... Thank you for the... No, you got to be careful. I don't believe in shocking the system. I have my own exercise regimen. It consists in watching 5 to 6 hours of television after... No. I bicycle every day. I really do. I don't mean... You see, this is... I'm going to talk about exercise. Am I at a break point here or what? Where am I? I'm fine. I could talk for 3 minutes. Good. You know, a lot of guys drop dead in their 30s way back when from excessive running. They would run and look at the watches, bingo, blowout. So I was a runner when I was in my 30s. I weighed, you know, I was thin, low cholesterol, runner. Till one day I was running up to a waterfall. Every day I'd run to a waterfall. And I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running. So I thought I went crazy. So I stopped running. Never ran again the rest of my life. My body was warning me to stop running. And then in that decade, there were a lot of very famous deaths of runners. Jim Fix, for example, was a very famous runner. He wrote for Runner's Magazine, and he dropped dead while running. So you say, well, what does that prove? I'm not saying it proves anything other than the body is not made for continuous stress of this kind, the kind that people put themselves through with exercise. So as time went on, I started to study different methods of what's considered to be exercise. And the Chinese have it right. The ancient Chinese had it exactly right, which is the moderate approach to it. No excessive pushing of the body. At least that's what I interpreted it to mean. I mean, maybe it's my own interpretation. So if I bicycle, I bicycle moderately, not until I'm I'm in a sweat bath and looking at a watch. I'm not doing it to sweat. I'm doing it to get some balance in my body. Balance is one of the most important things you can get in your body. So bicycling is excellent for gaining balance alone, even if you just do it to keep your balance. I've bicycled all my life, by the way. If I miss a day, I don't feel good. A couple of miles to town and back, go to look at people down in the mall, see what's going on, women, children, men, vendors. You know, it's like a touch of life. It's a real town. In a modern American suburb, the mall is actually our town, since there's no towns left to speak of. It's as good a town as any. So anyway, bicycle, look around, push around, get some, you know, yard time, go back to the prison of the computer and radio. But when it comes to pushing your body, I believe that many young men have it wrong, and they really push themselves too hard. They push and they push and they push and they run for a certain amount of time. They look good, don't get me wrong. They're thin, they're lean, they're in good shape. But I'm not so sure that that is so good to sustain for a very long period of time in your life. Moderate, moderate, moderate. And all you got to do is talk to an orthopedic surgeon about it if you think I'm making this up. The joints will go from excessive pounding. The hips, the joints are going to be replaced early on from the running. So there are other less, what do they call it? There's a word, less impact kind of sports.
Savage. There's not a second goes by when I'm not thinking of you in some way. I want to see your face. Feel your hands in mine. All my love for you.
Go, go, go!
Take it now. Leave nothing in my heart. Fill me only with what I need to fight.
There's a new movie out called The Gray. It's in theaters. It's about men being stranded in the frozen tundra. Joining us right now on The Savage Nation to discuss this outstanding movie is the writer and director, Joe Carnahan. Joe, welcome to The Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
Look, without giving away the plot, why don't you give my audience, The Savage Nation, an overview of your movie, The Gray?
Basically, it involves a group of pipeline workers, guys who work in the oil fields. In Alaska, and they're out there for months at a time, and they're flying back to civilization, and their plane goes down in a very hostile, inhospitable stretch of tundra that is basically the territory of a pack of gray wolves, which have never seen human beings before, and look at them as a threat and basically begin hunting them.
Well, what was the location and the weather like where you filmed this, and what challenges did the weather pose?
We filmed in British Columbia, north of Vancouver, about 12 hours north of Vancouver, outside a town called Smithers, and it was extraordinarily difficult. We shot a place called Hudson Bay Mountain, and I think the coldest day we had was minus 37, and we got blown off the mountain three times by twice due to whiteout and the third time due to winds. We had 70-mile-an-hour winds, so it was extraordinarily difficult, but I also think it was necessary to shoot in those kind of conditions, because I think audiences are very savvy these days, and had we chosen to do this on a soundstage with potato flakes and fans, I think the audiences would have known it was a fake immediately and inauthentic, and therefore it wouldn't have the effect it seems to be having. It was extremely difficult on the equipment, as you might imagine, the cold. We had film freeze in the mags, and we lost takes. We had film disintegrate just due to being brittle. But again, I just thought it was necessary that we go out in extremis in that kind of environment and make this movie that way.
Joe, what does it take to get an original script in Hollywood produced these days?
Well, I think you have to make the script for a price. I think that had I decided to make The Gray for $70 or $75 million, I wouldn't have made the film. We made it for $25 million, and therefore, that's what I call kind of the sweet spot right now with Hollywood. If you can make a movie for under $40 million, in particular in the $25 to $30 million range, I still think you can get something reasonably original made. It helped, obviously, Gray is still a genre film. It still has an action thriller vibe to it, with obviously with elements of a horror film, but it was still a marketable film, and therefore not something that was just an art house specialized kind of a movie. So that, I think, was made it easier to get made.
Your story is about men who are stranded in a frozen wasteland. It sounds a lot like the Jack London novels I read in my youth. Obviously, you drew some of your inspiration from him, but where else did you get your inspiration from for this movie?
I did draw inspiration from Jack London. I think, and these are the same White Fang and Call of the Wild. These are the same books that I read as a kid. So I did, but I also thought there was a very rich cinematic history with the survival film. And I think I go back to, like, Deliverance was a big inspiration for me, particularly the movie, but also James Dickey's book, which I'm a huge fan of. That was a big one. Then there was a couple of kind of seminal films. Jaws was obviously a big influence. Ridley Scott, who produced The Gray, Alien, another big influence. So I took from kind of different quadrants, but I've always been a big fan of this kind of subgenre, the survival film. And I always thought if I ever got a chance to do one, this would be it for me. And I really wanted to make it or kind of take it to the next level.
Do you think that a movie about a man surviving in the wild is considered by some in Hollywood as too insensitive in this day of hypersensitive political sensibilities? I don't know why, but who knows?
I think what I've encountered, which has really been interesting to me, is there's been this outcry from, I think, which really is amazing, from a very kind of lefty standpoint of the animal advocacy, which I think are, you know, instead of employing kind of calm and reason, they go to hysteria and histrionics. And it's been very difficult to try to actually impart the truth with these groups who are insistent on the fact that we killed wolves and we murdered wolves for this film, which couldn't be further from the truth. I think that kind of activism scares me, because I think it comes from zealotry. It doesn't come from a real place of the sensibility or like I said, or logic or reason. It just comes from this place of anger and the uninformed. And that, I think, to me, at least making a film in Hollywood, I think that there's certain things politically, I guess, that this reflects, but it reflects my ideas as a man, my ideas about faith, my ideas about God, my ideas about my mortality. And I hope that those things are timeless enough to transcend the political spectrum.
Joe Conahan, thanks for being with us, and good luck with your movie, The Gray.
Michael, it's great to talk to you, man. Hope everybody sees The Gray, which is currently in theaters now.
Fortunately, though, people like Mr. West and Governor Brewer and so on, particularly Mr. West, is not only not representative of the African American community or of the Republican Party, let alone of the American public. So what he says really is of little or no consequence.
Wow, you know how much that irritates me. Well, imagine how your throat will get this winter without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. That's right. I'm talking about Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops, we all grew up with. They're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors. Pine Brothers has been a trusted brand since 1870. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothersyum.com.
Savage.
Texas Ronald, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I've been unemployed for over about a year now. And basically, to be honest with you, I've become a recluse and have left the house in about a 15-month period about three times, one for a funeral and two other times.
You're starting to sound like a talk show host.
I see all these commercials for all these drugs that they're pushing on TV. I just don't buy into that.
Well, I can't comment on that. I'm against such drugs. I don't think that they're very beneficial, number one. But if you're staying at home and you become totally reclusive, I joke about it. I do go out. How are you going to find gainful employment if you stay at home?
Yeah, that's true. I use the Internet to, look up certain job sites and everything. But
but that hasn't worked out, has it?
No, sir, it has not.
What kind of work did you do?
Structural engineer.
Oh, you're an engineer by training?
Yes, but I think it's more of a. I think I'm basically I used to go out all the time. I had a good social life. All the friends that I did have, I still have them. They think I'm still working. They think, you know, I haven't reached out to anybody.
Okay. You're feeling ashamed. You know, it's a shame that a man with your education shouldn't be of use to a society like this instead of giving jobs to illegal aliens. It's sickening. I'm sure there's a place for you right in your own community. You just answered your own question, by the way. Just talking to me for less than 2 minutes, you answered your own question. You just said to me, you haven't even talked to your old friends who think you're working. And it's because you have pride. You don't want them to know that you're out of work. You're going to have to swallow your pride. You're going to have to take a shave, a haircut, put on some nice clothing, get together with your friends for a beer somewhere. And you're going to say, you know, I've recently lost my job. Do you guys know of anything? Let's start networking together. I will bet you that within 3 months, you're going to wind up on your feet again.
Can I ask you something else? You know, basically, I don't know why. I just become inclusive. And when I do go out, for these three times, Dr. Savage, in the last 15 months, I mean, I get these panic attacks. Is it learned? I've never been like this. I used to be outgoing.
Well, it's because the whole core of your being fell out. In America, perhaps in most of the world, a man identifies with his profession, his career, his work. And when you lose that core, it's like the center of your being falls out, so you feel frightened because, you know, the core of your identity is gone, Ronald. You mean, after all, didn't you go to college?
Yes, I did.
And how many, you got a bachelor's and another degree or just a bachelor's?
Bachelor's.
In engineering?
Yes, doctor.
And the years you were working, were you an engineer?
Yes, I was.
So you're feeling embarrassed that you're no longer working as an engineer because the building trades have died off. But with your background, with your education, there's no reason that you can't go out. Now, as far as the anxiety goes, I would think that you need a little crutch to get you over this hump. I I'm not a big believer. I would go to a doctor. I would tell him exactly what you want to do, which is meet your friends, talk with them about networking, but you're a little afraid because you have anxiety. I would say that a crutch during this period for that anxiety is a good idea. How do you like that? In other words, there is a place for psychiatric medication in our lives. It's just knowing when to use it and know when to drop it. That's as far as I would go, Ronald. I hope I've been of some use to you. So general listeners, you're listening to the show. Don't you like the way I'm handling this? I mean, you know that what I just said made sense to that man. I would never have taken that call if I didn't think that I had something to help him with. Portland, Oregon. Cheryl, welcome to the Savage Nation. Your question, please.
Dr. Savage, my niece is 40 and fairly obese. She's pregnant, and I would like your opinion on having a baby at a water birthing center compared to a hospital.
Has she had children before?
No. And she's had two miscarriages.
Okay, well, what does her obstetrician recommend?
I have no idea. She's out of the country right now, and she's coming home in a month. And this is what she thinks.
See, I would never hazard a guess with regard to a third-party question like this because this is a health question. Health questions are notoriously foolish to answer on a radio show, so I'm going to defer. Thank you for the call. In fact, I will not answer health questions. No questions about health because that's a whole different area. You understand? Mississippi, Laura, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, my husband and I stay home with our two small children. We're a single-income family, and we're currently swamped with medical bills due to my ulcerative colitis, and we can't decide if I should try to get a job teaching my degrees in education just to get that double coverage insurance, but it would only basically pay enough to put my two small children in daycare.
Hold on. If we're talking about this in terms of the quotient of the medical plan that you'd be gaining through the job, how much is that going to be worth to your family? A lot?
Well, with the cost of my medical bills, yes. We're swamped with my medical bills right now.
Well, I think, again, you've answered your own question. Although the money you earn will only pay for child care. The medical plan that you will be getting by going to work will greatly aid your family's finances, would it not?
Yeah, it would help with my medical. I just am so worried about
All right. So how old are your children?
Almost 3 and 14 months.
Well, 14 months is a little young to be put in child care. I think that's your real question, correct?
Yeah, definitely.
The real question is not whether you should work or not. It's whether you should leave your children or not. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's the big thing. We didn't have.
Well, you're at a real crossroads because nobody would recommend you leave such a small child in the hands of a child care facility. On the other hand, you're desperate, and you need the health plan that you get from a job. So I don't have a direct answer. Have you discussed it with your husband?
Well, we have health insurance for his job, but if we had two health plans, then it would, cancel
yes,
out a
of
lot.
Yes, of course. It would give you additional coverage, and you'd be able to get a little breathing space. Last question. Do you have anybody in your family who could watch the young child while you're working?
No.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to hazard a no guess on this one, Laura. I have no advice on this. It's too personal a question. And I'm sorry I can't help you any further. I mean, there's certain... I'm not going to fire from the hip here. A young child like that, I don't think I would leave at home. But on the other hand, the poor woman needs a medical care. I almost feel like raising, money on the show. What if I turned it into like a money-raising show? God, I'd be busy, wouldn't I? Here's a tough one. I've been waiting not to take this call because it's going to be a heartbreaker. I can see it coming. Fresno, Aaron, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I'm approaching an end-of-the-life situation with my cat. And we've been, he's been real close to me. And
right.
He could go today or go tomorrow. Or
right.
Week. But we're
right.
Getting real close. And I don't think I can stand taking him to the vet.
No, I understand that. How old is your cat?
11.
But it's a part of you. And you can't, the idea of euthanizing the animals like killing yourself.
Yeah, oh yeah. And kill me.
Well, are you accepting the fact that life let me put it this way, that life is terminal for all of us?
I understand that. I haven't really dealt with a lot of death in my life, though.
Well, I think this is part of the problem with people and their pets, is that, yes, they have affection and fondness for their animals, but they're also facing their own mortality at a time in their life when their mortality is not really a current issue. And they're really grieving for themselves and for the whole concept of the sufferings of humanity, the Buddhist wheel, as they say, which is that we're born to die. It's a horrible question. It's something that nobody really wants to face, but it's the birth of philosophy, and it's also the birth of all religion is based upon this one single question. And there is no single answer for it. There are many answers for it. But to get back to the pragmatics of your animal, I can only say to you, if your animal is suffering, you have a decision to make. Is the animal suffering?
Not yet. He's just, I can see he's starting. He's coughing a lot, but it's only once a day, but for like 10 minutes.
I hear another animal in the back. Do you have a dog?
No, actually, I'm taking a walk through a neighborhood, and the dog's...
Oh. I was at a dog show a couple of weeks ago, and I love the Irish wolfhounds, but I know they live 5-6 years only. So I said to a breeder, I said, but God, I love that animal. My friend had one, and he only lived to 6, and he was one of the most magnificent animals I've ever seen in my life. She said, well, I have a 20-acre ranch in southern Oregon. She said, I raise big dogs. I have big dogs and little dogs. She said, because you need a mix of both, because the little dogs outlive the big dogs. In other words, going into having a pet is going into the mortality issue, and you're going to lose them at a certain point. The only question that becomes operative is the animal suffering? Once the animal starts to suffer, I think the decision is already made, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well, so that's the issue. If the animal's not suffering, so, comfort the little creature as long as you can and start to accept the fact that he's going to have to, at some point you're going to have to let go.
Yeah.
But, again, the issue here, the operational word is suffering. Suffering is the issue. They're not humans. Thanks for the call. So, I had a dog before, my dog Teddy, named Snowy. I loved that dog. Teddy, you shouldn't listen to this. Snowy was a Sheltie, a little collie. And ever when I was a little boy in the Bronx, I used to love the show Lassie. So when I got this Sheltie, which is a miniature collie, the kids were very young, and I remember to the day that she was dying, that I remember the dog being a little lassie, jumping over posts. I trained her to jump over fences behind the house and walking. And, last, no, he's not. And this dog became, the children grew up, they moved away, they went to college, and I was left with the Snowy. She became my best friend. I mean, loyal like you can't believe. Everything you can imagine that you have with a dog. Well, I also overfed her, I got to admit. Being a big eater myself, everything I ate, I gave her. I wasn't adding up that she was smaller than me. So eventually she lost the ability to, she got arthritis. No, really, she was way overweight. At the time, I had an assistant. He arranged, so everyone said to me, you've got to euthanize her. I said, you know what? I'll euthanize you before I euthanize her. I loved all the people saying, it's time to put her to sleep. I said, I'll put you to sleep first. Don't give me such advice. I got so angry. I hate when people put their euthanizer to you right in my, like it's their business. Just like categorically, so you such a cavalier statement, euthanizer, they would say. I said, euthanize yourself. Leave me alone. Savage.